many steps on the street. And she watches and waits at the window, wondering who he'll meet. It's a wasteland of TV dinners. It's a highway in heat. And there's nothing but time on the table, clock in the same old beat. Jolene steps out like the night for the party. Jolene. High glass heels and polka dots. Ghosts of summer have flown. In the sailors of winter, their boats come sit by the fire and tell me your secrets. Love isn't kept easily. The windows are shuttered and closed. With blankets to keep out the cold. But you are still restless, your heart is enchanted, drifting away from me. And is she or worse, to lay the high seas? She must be beautiful. White linen sails that have captured your vagrant breeze. Singing
Hi, Janice.
Hey, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. Long time no see.
Good.
I don't know if you remember when you were in my studio with me.
Yeah, it was a little while ago.
It was a while ago when we were other, must have been around 96.
Yeah.
Something like that. How you doing?
Doing fine, thanks.
Good. This is a great CD.
Thank you.
We're talking with Janice Ian, and one of the most prolific songwriters in the country, and someone who, at only 49 years old, we remember back when, because she was also 15 when she came out with the song Society's Child, which is still a great song, and of course, a song that I used to sit and listen to every night at 17, which not only girls identify with, but guys did too, that weren't the most handsome men in the world.
Well, it was amazing to me when that song was being a hit, how many of the guys who came backstage to thank me were really good looking, were football players and champions on various teams in school. You know, it just really taught me that everybody is basically the same.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting that people that are more handsome would actually like that too.
Yeah.
But it was just a beautiful song, though, too.
Thanks, Mark. Know?
And you actually sang it for me in studio, which I enjoyed very much.
Hope you kept the tape.
I did. Of course I did. I also have a picture of you that we're going to put on the website, you and I together.
Oh, great.
I don't look the same anymore, but you pretty much do. You
well,
haven't changed
yeah,
much.
I got taller.
You haven't changed much, actually, but I have. I've got much more handsome now.
Good.
Lots of plastic surgery. And,
good, doesn't hurt.
Yeah, well, this is a great album, and it's a brand new CD that's out. It's called, it's a very interesting title, too. It's called God and the FBI. And the story behind it is simply amazing. When we spoke last time, that was never mentioned. And I guess at that point, maybe you didn't have the information you do now? Or?
No, it took me 9 years to get my family's FBI files out of them under the Freedom of Information Act. They say that you can have your files, but then they do a funny thing. They send you a note after 6 months saying, oh, we're really backed up. We're sorry. It'll be a while. And then 6 months after that, they send you a note saying, well, since it's been so long, do you still want them? Hmm. And they just keep doing that year after year. It took a friend of a friend in the State Department to get them for me.
They think you'll go away.
They think you'll go away, and I don't understand what the point is. It's not like my parents were actively involved in trying to overthrow the government. You know, my dad was a chicken farmer.
Yeah, and the problem was, you know, that if when you looked back, when your dad tried to get any kind of a tenured position, he was prevented from that, and he didn't know it. Why
the
reason
was? Well, that was the worst thing that we discovered in reading the files, you know, because there's so much blacked out that you can't tell a whole lot, but then there's a whole list of, when my dad became a school teacher, he went back to college on the GI Bill. He kept trying to get tenure so that he could stay in the system longer than 2 years, and he was always turned down, and he was a great teacher, and parents would protest, and students would protest, and we found out reading the files that the FBI had gone to his place of employment every second year and started asking questions like, was he a drunk, did he consort with known communists, and of course, no one was going to give him a tenured contract after that.
No, and it's unfortunate because, of course, I'm sure thought it was because of his teaching methods that he didn't get it.
Yeah, he felt like he was a really great teacher and the system had no place for him, and he considered that a personal failure almost to the day he died.
In this time of elections, one of the lines of God and the FBI that you wrote from the new CD stands out. It says, every politician is a sewer of ambition.
Mm.
Do you believe that?
I believe that by the time someone has reached the point where they have the resources and the backing to run for major political office, they're going to have lost a lot of the reasons that we would like to elect people to political office.
Mm.
You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with ambition, but it's disheartening to me when Jimmy Carter is the only ex-president or vice president we've got who's actually using his position for improving the world. Everybody else is out giving speeches for $50,000 a night.
And Jimmy Carter gobbled up when he was a president.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was too nice a guy.
Didn't play the game.
Yeah.
That's discouraging in a country like ours where really we are the populace and we're supposed to be able to elect somebody who represents us instead of someone who represents whatever interests they have at heart to line their pockets.
Yeah. See, that line sounds familiar. We all play the game.
Mm.
Hmm. Also, one of the things in here that in the lyrics of God and the FBI, you mentioned about the word Jew. Do you think that the Jewish part was something that was related to this whole thing?
Well, I know just from what I've read about the 50s and the Hoover era and the Red Scare that there were target groups. Anybody who was foreign and had moved here, anybody who was first-generation Jews, intellectuals, anything that was outside of what these people considered right and proper. You know,
sounds like the Hitler era, doesn't it?
It does, and I think it was very scary. It was a very sad time in our country's history, you know, and it was very courageous of people like Edward R. Murrow to stand up against it because Hoover had such unbelievable power over everyone. Every president who came in said they were going to fire him. Every president met with him and then decided to re-up his contract. You know, it's very scary for someone to have that kind of hold on people.
Well, he had great files in every president.
Yeah, one wonders where those files are now, don't we?
Yeah, someone has them.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. You know, one of the songs I really enjoyed of yours as a songwriter and as a singer, actually, was Jesse, which I love that song.
That's a lovely song.
From Stars. And Roberta Flack, of course, made a hit out of it. And now you have a new single, another woman's name, Jolene.
Jolene.
It's a beautiful song as well.
Thanks. It's a completely different take, though. And Jesse
is
about love lost, and Jolene is about a woman who delivers a baby in the park.
Exactly. You know, there's some songs in here that I think, and Jolene's one of them, are instant hits. Memphis, which you did with Willie Nelson, is wonderful.
Willie was astounding to work with. He was just everything you could hope for when you meet somebody you idolize.
It's a great song, too.
Thanks.
And there's also another one there, She Must Be Beautiful, which I think stands out from the crowd as well.
Mm, Kai Fleming co-wrote that, a wonderful writer.
Mm. When you were in studio, we were talking about your personal life, and at the time you were with someone with the same name as me, Snyder. Are you still with her?
Yeah, it's been 12 years now.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That's nice in the days where we see, Ellen DeGeneres and Ann breaking up, and that made huge headlines around the world.
Oh, are they breaking up?
They did break up.
No kidding.
They announced it yesterday publicly.
The love that would last forever, eh?
Yeah, they thought they said that. But, right now, Melissa Etheridge seems to be the most long lasting.
Yeah, I think she and Julie have been together slightly after me and Pat. I think for about a year longer.
Yeah, but
yeah, it's kind of nice. You know, it's nice to be living in a world where a gay relationship is not automatically something where people think it's frivolous.
Well, it's interesting to note that the Boston Globe yesterday had an editorial writer who was writing about the situation with Anne and Ellen. And she is a lesbian herself, and she mentioned that it's something that actually brought lesbian and gay relationships to the forefront and actually made them socially acceptable.
I don't know if I would say that they made them socially acceptable, but they certainly made a lot more people think about it. You know, and I think the problem with the whole thing, in part, is that people are essentially decent. People care a whole lot more about whether they've got money for their kids' shoes and for their mortgage payment than they care about who you live with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that there are a lot of people who honestly believe that they've never met a gay person and that there's nobody gay in their families because so many of us are closeted. So as more and more people come out of the closet, especially high-profile people, the people who are not high-profile feel a little easier about coming out to their families, and the world starts to change. You know, it changes in inches.
Hmm. Glad in the FBI is your 17th album. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, amazing. Well, you have to remember I started when I was 14, so I have an excuse.
Do you enjoy singing all the old songs from?
I do. I do. In fact, I've put Society's Child back in my set this last year because I looked up one day and I thought, wow, you know, that was a good song. Why aren't I singing it?
That wasn't just a good song, it was a great song.
Thank you.
And it's interesting to note, I mean, that the content was, of course, about an interracial relationship.
Mm.
And it was banned in places like Boston.
Yeah, Boston, well, Boston's a tough place, you know. Boston used to be extremely conservative. But they did play it eventually, and it's funny because Boston was one of the first cities that record broke in. And I remember it was the first time I ever did a show anywhere where it sold out, and I remember that because I was 14 and a half or 15, and we were driving toward the venue. There was this long line of people, and I said to someone, I wonder what all those people are lined up for. And they started laughing and said, it's for your show. And it was only about 2 in the afternoon.
Mm.
So I was just stunned.
Well, that song, really, I mean, it hit a nerve in people. It was a beautiful, beautiful song, and as at 17 was to Ollie and Jesse. Ollie's song is just so beautiful.
Thanks.
And I always admired that when I met you. Yes, you're a little dynamo. You don't expect all that stuff out of you, but you're very powerful. In fact, people have said that you play like a man.
Play like a guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always been told that. It's a funny kind of backhanded compliment.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not, but
well,
it's kind of a weird comment.
It was, you know, in the 60s, for a woman to do anything as well as a man was considered a big deal.
Mm.
Now it's kind of, well, it's like I was watching a couple of little girls play basketball with one of my nephews, and he said to one of them, well, you shoot baskets like a girl. And she looked at him, and she went, well, duh, I'm a girl, hello. And I thought, isn't that great? Because when I was a kid, that was an insult.
Well, that's true, yeah. Well, nowadays with the WNBA, that's not in South anymore.
Do they not rock?
They're cool. They're
they
cool.
They kill me.
I think it's great.
Yeah, it's like watching basketball the way the Celtics used to play it, you know?
Mm, well, there's nothing better than seeing this kind of stuff come to the forefront, like the women's soccer team when
mm-hmm.
they won the title. I think that it's great, and it can only help society when women are treated as equals and are equals in the eyes of everybody.
I think that would be a very good thing. It would certainly make it easier on men, you know, because so many men that I know in their 40s feel such pressure to be perfect and to provide and to always be strong, and that's very hard, you know.
It's a very tough thing to live up to.
It is.
You know, I'm looking at your biography. You've done everything from children's music to getting a jazz Grammy nomination, to all these things that are going on. Is there anything that you, and all these soundtracks and things from movies and TV, is there anything that you haven't pursued? I noticed one thing, that you've taken all kinds of acting lessons.
I did. I took acting for 10 years with Stella Adler in Los Angeles because I wanted to learn a form that wasn't my form. And she sent me off to ballet as well, which I was just horrible at, but I had a great time doing. But, you know, it was never with any intention of acting. I guess there's still stuff I'd like to do. I mean, I've always wanted to write a Broadway show, a musical, since I was 3 or 4 years old and saw a dress rehearsal of Oklahoma. So I haven't gotten to do that yet.
That's an easy one. That one you should be able to accomplish. I'm just thinking, you know, right now, acting and music is so closely related with the video concept and things like
mm-hmm.
that. Has there been a chance for you? Have you ever been offered TV slots?
Nothing that I've taken.
No.
I don't think I'd be very good. You know, and I know people like Kathy Bates who are just brilliant, and it seems to me that it would be it'd be embarrassing to do something badly when I hold myself up to that standard.
Well, Kathy Bates is a standard that very few people reach anyway.
That's true. That's true. She's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, she's one of the top people in her field.
Mm.
But I mean, I would think that that you could actually do something like that and probably do it pretty well. And
well,
it would give you more visibility.
You know, I just think if I couldn't act as well as I write, then I would hate to have it out there.
Mm. You know, it's interesting to note what happens with record companies and all that kind of stuff, how careers go. I know that I'm a big fan and a friend of Billy Ray Cyrus, and Billy Ray put out an album last year, the year before, called Shot Full of Love.
Which was Mercury, a really good record.
It was a great record.
Yeah.
It was great, and Mercury kind of just dumped it.
Mm-hmm.
And he recently signed with a new company. He's got a new CD called out, Summer Rain, coming out, and it's going to be excellent. But you've bounced around different companies as well. What do you think about record companies? And now you're with one that is a real nice company, Windham Hill, but I understand it now is owned by RCA and BMG.
Well, they were always owned by BMG.
They were.
I mean, for these last 10 years or so.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So they were part of the family operating independently, and in theory, that's the way they'll continue. I don't know, the dust is still kind of settling. You know, it's a little scary, Mark, that there are really only 5 record companies in the world now.
Mm.
That's pretty scary. It's a little scary that there are 40,000 CDs put out every year. That's scary. It's hard to tell. You know, on the one hand, I feel really lucky that I have a contract because so many of the people I came up with don't.
Mm.
And having a record contract means you get to make records and you get to play. So that's great. On the other hand, everything is so big now that you're never quite sure where you are or what you're doing.
I think one of the good positive things about this, though, and you're right, there's a huge monopoly in this, but people like, and I can't remember her name, Annie DeFranco, and people like that who have done their own independent type thing,
mm-hmm.
more and more people now are doing their own independent labels, and with the Internet, it's making it easier now to market CDs to new people.
Totally cuts out the middleman.
Yeah. What do you think about the whole Napster controversy?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I think Napster's great, personally. And I'll probably be drawn and quartered by my my profession for it, but... You know, there's a whole generation of people like my nephews who are 12 to 18 years old who didn't grow up on free concerts. They didn't grow up on 99-cent vinyl. And if they want to go out to a concert, it's going to cost them, what, $35 a head?
Minimum.
You know, what 15-year-old can afford that? And how many parents can afford that? CDs are really expensive. We all know that they only cost about $1.50 to $2 to manufacture. So... That's one aspect to me. I don't blame people for being upset when somebody threatens to take that away. The other aspect is that Napster, for artists like me, is great. It's selling CDs because there are kids logging on, going to me because they go to Ani and she talks about me, and then they come and buy my CD. So that's fantastic.
Mm.
And I think there's got to be one place that's still free in the world. I mean, they're going to start charging admissions to parks in a minute. You know, there's got to be something.
Well, I'm glad that you feel like that. I feel the same way, and I do think the same way that people who go to Napster and some of these other things and download some of these songs are the ones that go to the stores and buy the CDs because they're really motivated.
They absolutely do. I see it on my website.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I go over to janicean.com, and there's all these emails and these bulletin board postings about, I heard this song, Society's Child, on Napster. Where can I get it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the final point for someone like me is, it's not little guys like me who are going to get hurt by not making our, 3¾ cents per play. You know, it's the big artists. And how many cars can you drive at once?
Mm. That's kind of true. And talking about your janicean.com, some great stuff on there. There's a biomaterial and some CDs you have out that I never even heard of.
Mm.
The last one I got was the one that you were promoting when you came on the show, which I think was Revenge.
Well, Windham Hill were really gracious because I explained to them that we had a tradition of making a CD every Christmas for the fans, and it's only done through our mailing list. You can't buy it in stores or anything. In fact, you can't even buy it through the website. You have to be on the mailing list. And they allowed me to continue doing that. So what that means is that the fans can buy something that's 14 or 15 songs that have never been released before by me, and they can have something special. And I think that's a cool thing to be able to offer.
It's a little different. I mean, people like me in the radio, we don't even have it, so.
Well, you'd have to be on the mailing list. What can I say? No, and it's good, too. I started importing my CDs when I realized that fans were paying $35 for the imports. So we cut deals with foreign manufacturers to kind of get around the contractual obligations here, and we import them and charge $15. So it works out well for everybody. It pays basically for the website to keep running.
Right. And you can check out that website, janiceian.com, and go to your store and buy this new CD. It is incredible. It's called God and the FBI
by
Wyndham Hill. And I got to say, I was knocked out by some of the songs on this thing.
Thanks.
It's continuing what you've always done, and that is write great music and sing it well. And you have had some help on this one, too, with people like Willie Nelson. And there's a gentleman named John something or other that sang one of the songs with you.
John Cowan.
Yeah, he's very good.
He's a great singer.
Very good singer.
Wonderful
yeah.
singer. He's got a very good CD out as well.
Yeah, I never heard of him before, but now I have.
Yeah, it was an interesting blend. We had Jim Cregan, who used to lead Rod Stewart's band and is a wonderful writer. Philip Clark, who came from Australia, also a wonderful writer and guitarist. And Mark Moreau, who was coming off of 7 years as Madonna's engineer.
Hmm.
So it was a real interesting group to put together.
Well, it's a great CD, and I wish you a lot of luck. I hope Jolene becomes a huge hit, and Memphis, and songs like the She Must Be Beautiful. I can see them as some of the next singles.
Thanks.
Good stuff. And thanks again for talking.
Oh,
and,
pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
I look forward to our next get together.
Yeah, we'll have to do some live singing then.
Take care.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Bye.